work has been involved in this.
This is an interview with Dr. Finley Edge on February 18, 1977. Dr. Edge, we were talking about the concern for beginning the School of Religious Education, and I mentioned to you the concern that was stated by one source that churches wanted to have men who were trained in the same institution who would have the same philosophy working on the same staff. And you said that this was perhaps a minor concern, and you mentioned one that you felt was more of a major concern. I wonder if you would discuss that a little.
Well, I think the one that you mentioned was a real concern. That is, I think that the pastors who were graduates of Southern Seminary did desire to have men or women ministers of education trained in the same institution with the same philosophy or philosophical background as cohorts and workers with them. And of course, I think it also must be stated that at that time I was a very young professor, and therefore really was not brought into the inner circles of discussion a great deal, where the president and others who may have been discussing these factors were doing so. So I cannot really speak with any kind of authority as to the how much weight this was. I am aware that it certainly was one of the stated reasons, but I, from a purely pragmatic standpoint, I think that one of the major reasons that the School of Religious Education was started was that Dr. Dobbins and others felt that Southern Seminary ought to be training and producing more people to work in the field of religious education, but that we were not having people with this vocational purpose to come, and really we did not have the courses to prepare them for this either, even if they had come. So I think that my guess is that one of the major reasons for the beginning of the school was the fact that Southwestern had a School of Religious Education, and that predominantly all of the people planning to go into that type of vocational work were going to Southwestern, and Southern Seminary realized that if we were going to make any kind of headway into getting these people to come in our direction, that we were going to have to start a School of Religious Education, because college students looking in the catalogs of prospective theological institutions looked at the number of professors, at the number of courses that were being offered, and obviously saw that the predominant work was being done in Southwestern. If they want to get the training, that's where they should go. And so without a school, we could not get either the professors, because you see, the people in other departments of the seminary did not want to have teachers in the Department of Religious Education to outnumber, say, for example, the teachers in New Testament. This was stated openly. But so the only way that you could get an adequate staff to teach religious education was to form a school. And so I think the reason for the formation of the school was fairly pragmatic in nature.
Do you have any idea? It took a number of years for this to be accomplished. Do you have any idea why that long lapse of time was? Because Southwestern began their school in 1915. And trained men from 1915 all the way through the mid-40s, when the idea really began to get rolling at Southern. Do you have any idea why it took that long for Southern to catch on to it?
I can only guess at this. I think that Southern Seminary took pride in the fact that it was the school of the prophets, and that religious education was something in which it simply was essentially not interested.
I was told by one of the trustees that that was a major concern of Dr. John Sampas, that this was a school of the prophets, and that that was what this school was here to do, and that it, we had to wait until after Dr. Sampas had retired and Dr. Fuller came on the scene before that idea began to change.
That probably is correct. That probably is correct.
What was your first position on the faculty here?
I was instructor. Well, of course, I was not on the faculty. They, I spent 2 years as an instructor teaching courses in religious education before coming on the faculty as an assistant professor of religious education.
Right. Did that begin in 43?
No, in 45.
45.
In 45, actually.
How were the courses broken down between you and Dr. Diamonds as to the teaching of them? Did you teach religious education mostly?
I took all of the courses in religious education. Now, by this, I mean the courses that were strictly religious education. Mm-hmm. Dr. Dobbins continued to teach church administration, psychology of religion, evangelism, worship and evangelism, and journalism. But all that was strictly religious education was in my area of responsibility.
Now, was that because he wanted to do it that way, or...?
This was his choice.
I see.
Right.
Okay. When you and Dr. Dobbins were talking about what you were to teach, did he ever state to you his purposes in teaching religious education here prior to your joining the faculty? What he was trying to accomplish by teaching religious education?
What I recall was that he was interested in trying to teach pastors how to function in the local church. And basically, of course, the emphasis was on the training of pastors, and we had almost no people who were planning to go into the field of religious education. Dr. Losner, when I was a student, was maybe the only one that I knew anything about, and we had later on a few, but there really was no emphasis. The basic emphasis was upon the equipping of pastors to be able to function in the local church.
Was that your first emphasis, the emphasis that you started under?
Yes, this is correct.
And did your philosophy, did you agree with that, or did you wish that you could be teaching men to be in vocational religious education?
Well, I guess I really have to be honest in this and say I had planned to be a pastor. This was my vocational role. And so I was basically very happy to teach preachers to function in religious education, so that the concern or the need for the training of people who were going to be vocational workers as ministers of education was something that really emerged in my own mind after I began to teach.
Well, you began to teach a number of the young ladies that were attending the Carver School, and they were preparing themselves to be directors of religious education, directors of children's work, and various things like that. Did this help to grow your concept of that as a thrust of your teaching?
Well, I'm sure that it must have had some influence, but really, as I'm able to get in touch with that at this time, I I do not see this, particularly at the beginning, as really making a big influence upon my thinking. And it was really only after several years had transpired that the concern for the developing or training of ministers of education who had, quote, Southern Seminary's philosophy, that they needed to be trained. And so mine was really one that developed over a period of time.
Did you finally move to the point where you became more concerned about training men for vocational religious education than you did teaching pastors how to take care of religious education needs in their church?
Now, this is a very difficult question for me to answer. I know what the right answer ought to be. The answer ought to be yes. But I'm not really sure that emotionally I ever made that switch. I was delighted and elated to try to teach people who were going to do the work of ministry in religious education, and I had a real commitment to that. But at the same time, I was always aware that there were going to be so many of the ministers that we were, the pastors that we were training, who would never have a minister of education, and that everything that was going to happen in their church, they were going to have to do it. And so I still had a real deep and a strong commitment to the training of preachers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And must say I still do. Yes.
I assumed. Okay. The idea of starting a separate school specifically seemed to have surfaced during the administration of Ellis Fuller, as I can gather from everything. And this was referred to a faculty committee to study. But that committee didn't give any report for the first year. And in, according to the faculty minutes, you requested a report from the committee after a year. They went back then and finally did make a report. What motivated you to request that, or do you recall?
Well, I had come to the conviction that we were never really going to get the number of students in this area and professors without a school, and so it was with in mind that I wanted to push the committee, because I had the feeling that they would rather have not had faced the issue.
In other words, it was sort of permanently tabled as you perceived it.
I guessed that to be the case, mm-hmm. Right.
I kind of figured that out from the minutes.
And
I was really wondering there, you know, why it was you rather than Dr. Dobbins, and I think you've answered it. Now,
I don't really know. I think that you may be getting to this question a bit later on, but one of the really delicate issues with reference to the beginning of the School of Religious Education was Southern Seminary's relationship with the Woman's Missionary Union Training School, mm-hmm. the girls, mm-hmm. and to have started a school of religious education here was a tremendous threat to the school of the
Carver School,
the WMU Training School. I don't recall whether it was Carver School at that time or not. Maybe it was. But anyway, it was a tremendous threat. And I wondered, I don't know whether Dr. Dobbins was a bit, I don't know whether this was his, whether he was a bit reluctant to push this, mm-hmm. but I was a young guy and I saw this as a great need, mm-hmm. and not having had the heritage that some of the others had did have, I went ahead and pushed. Now, I do not know whether this really was the rationale.
Well, I was wondering if perhaps your youth the fact that you had not had a lot of the kind of
the background
that
right.
Dr. Dobbins had.
I didn't have the reputation to lose that Dr. Dobbins had. I didn't have that to lose which some of the others had. I didn't have the investment.
Right.
I was a nobody, and so when you're a nobody, you don't have much to lose.
Well, that does bring us to a question about Miss Littlejohn and the school. I was told by one source that she was very concerned that if the school was started here, this would begin to, then women students would begin to board at the seminary, and that because of the very large investment that they had there, she had to keep that school full of young girls. Do you think this was a concern, and do you think that was as much a concern as, or was this a reason for the delicacy of the situation, or what?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that, that this was the basic concern. I think that this was a concern of Dr. Littlejohn and others related to Women's Missionary Union Training School. And I think that their fears were well-founded. I have no question in my mind that the beginning of the School of Religious Education at Southern Seminary was the death knell for the WMU Training School. I think that it was as obvious that it would happen as night follows day. And they saw this, they recognized it, and I think they were absolutely correct.
Dr. McCall became the president almost a year, or about a year before the School of Religious Education became a separate school. Do you know that whether he had any real input into the into this, or was this just that he was following a decision that was already made by the trustees?
I really have no information at that point. I really don't know.
Okay. Let me get to this one about the about your how you perceived your role. When you became a professor on the faculty of the School of Religious Education and were no longer a professor of the full faculty or the, whatever they would call it.
Yes.
No longer a theology professor.
Right.
Did you perceive a change in your role in your mind and in the minds of your fellow faculty members?
This is a difficult thing, and yet I think I would almost have to answer the question yes. Traditionally, the religious education as a discipline has been either low or at the bottom of the totem pole so far as the attitude both of students and faculty are concerned. So that with the beginning of the School of Religious Education, I think there was a change. There was, fortunately from my standpoint, there were no overt changes because the people who were my friends continued to be my friends. And fortunately, we decided that we were going to keep our offices all intermingled, and we decided that we were not going to have a separate building because the differences was that would be administrative differences and not physical differences. But and I think that the change that took place probably was more within my own mind than anything else. But I stopped going to the faculty meetings of the School of Theology. I did not know what was going on with an area in which I was deeply interested and concerned. I tended to feel cut off from the largest segment of the institution. And I think that unconsciously there were some
changes that took place.
Well, they began to have a theology faculty meeting, a religious education faculty meeting, and a joint faculty meeting.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you were not able to attend then the theology faculty meetings, or you?
I don't
you did
recall.
Not.
Yeah, we did not. I don't recall whether we were. I don't know that there was any reason that we could not. And of course, inadvertently, what happened was that the School of Theology, being the one, the largest school, and also having been used to making all of the decisions, many times without knowing it, would make tremendous decisions that affected us, and we would just be left to come along.
They were simply brought to rubber stamp in the joint faculty meeting?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The reason I asked that question is that I noted that in studying the feasibility of this, there was great concern expressed about what had happened at Southwestern over a number of years and how that faculty had related to the theology faculty and
mm-hmm.
their constant striving
yes.
to achieve
yes.
equal status
yes.
and how this had always been a problem out there.
Yes. Well, one of the things, this was a major, major issue was that the conflict, competition between the two schools. And one of the things that we did was that all matters dealing with both schools would be determined by joint faculty. And one of the things that Dr. Peterson served as was that he attended both meetings, and whenever anything came up in one meeting that affected the other school, he would not let them vote.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a tremendous contribution,
mm-hmm.
though inadvertently there were times when mistakes were done, and one our school generally would rise up. But Dr. Peterson served well in this capacity. But also there was a desire on our part and their part not to that we did not want to compete, and therefore we decided not to have separate offices in different wings or different buildings, and decided not to have a different building. And also, let's see, there was another decision that came to mind, slipped me right now. We would not allow a person to come to the seminary and enter the School of Religious Education if he were going to be a pastor.
Right. I remember that.
Right. And we were very, very, we in this school were, we followed that just meticulously.
Mm-hmm.
We really held this very, very strongly because we did not want to go into competition with the School of Theology. We didn't want to have this kind of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that basically we really did have some good positive relations. There really has not been the conflict and competition between one school and the other. Another thing that we did was we said that any course that was being taught in one school would not be duplicated in the other school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, in recent years, that has not been followed, and that is leading to some conflicts
yes.
at the present time.
Right.
I really don't recall when there was any stated time for this. If I were guessing about this, I would say that Dr. Fuller came, first of all, committed to a strong emphasis for music in the local church. He had a great minister of music in his church. He wanted to start that. He started the School of Church Music.
I was told that he wanted Donald Winters here.
Yeah.
And that's one reason that he wanted it.
Yeah.
But also that he wanted that music.
And since they started the School of Church Music, it was, so far as I could tell, it was only then that Dr. Dobbins really started saying anything about the School of Religious Education.
I see.
So if I were just making a guess, and I don't have any information, that it was that
was the open door and the impetus.
Mm-hmm.